The initial weeks and months of the Trump presidency have had investors on an emotional roller coaster, with markets reacting to on-again, off-again tariffs. To help people navigate these uncertain times, I reached out to Neil Linsdell. He's Vice President of Investment Strategy for Raymond James Canada. On March 25th, we recorded this bilingual webinar on the first 60 days of the Trump presidency. I'm delighted to share our chat in this podcast edition. Et merci, Neil. It's so great to be with you. People might not know, but you and I actually have offices not that far from one another, and we chat on a regular basis. I read your publications religiously and share them with our clients. So let's get started. There's a lot of things that we can discuss. And I think I'd like to maybe just start out by focusing on the reminding people, setting the stage for what this first 60 days of the Trump presidency looks like. What were the policies or platform that got Donald Trump elected?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Mary. It's always great to get out. It's great to do live presentations, but I appreciate that we can do a lot more over Zoom and reach a much broader audience. I do travel the country. I make sure I see all the major branches and our advisors and do client appreciation events as much as I can. So it's always a lot of fun being able to get in front of an audience, take live questions, and try and put a lot of perspective on what we talk about. And obviously, you know, we have conversations about the economy and the markets, and obviously the last few months have been tumultuous to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. On va faire toutes les choses ici en français aussi ou en bilingue, mais comme avertissement en avance, je n'utilise pas ces mots toujours en français, donc peut-être on va utiliser les phrases franglais un peu, donc je suis désolé en avance. So to set this up, if we look at what's been going on over the last few months, you know, we talk about President Trump and what's been going on with the U.S. administration only because it has such a huge impact on what's going on now and our considerations on our federal election, on our economic growth prospects, which we can touch on what's going on there. It even has an effect on what's going on with the Bank of Canada setting interest rates. And of course, most popularly with the financial markets and what's going on with the stock market specifically. So if we back up and we take a look at the administration that's coming now and what we look at the kind of the grand policy, and you can really summarize it as an America First policy. And you could never begrudge a country for looking after its own interests first and foremost. And there's been a lot of policies and executive orders that have focused around immigration, bringing down costs for citizens, employment, and these types of policies. One of the things that's been most, you know, impactful to Canada has really been the tariffs that have been put in place, obviously, by executive order. And it's not even completely about the tariffs. It's been about the execution or the messaging of the tariffs and the kind of tumultuous reaction to tariffs being on, tariffs being off, not knowing what the number is going to be. It's going to be 25%. It's going to be 50%. And it becomes a little bit confusing. And it's difficult for businesses to plan. It's difficult for to investors to understand where to put their money. And there's a lot of uncertainty going on right now around that, of course.
Alors, tu as soulevé beaucoup de points très importants. et c'est sûr que beaucoup de monde, beaucoup d'investisseurs sont focusés sur les tarifs présentement. Puis je veux qu'on en parle, puis je veux que tu décrives how are tariffs affecting, obviously, Canada. But how could they also be affecting the U.S.? Je veux revenir sur le point que la plateforme de Donald Trump était vraiment America first, comme tu dis. Et pendant longtemps, lorsqu'on parlait du marché US, du US exceptionalism. Okay? Alors, quand il est venu au pouvoir, c'est pas comme si ça allait très mal du côté économique aux États-Unis. Est-ce que tu peux nous décrire un petit peu c'est quoi ce concept-là de US exceptionalism at the time that Trump took over the presidency?
Ouais. Mais l'économie américaine présentement et l'année passée, l'année avant ça, c'était très fort. On parle de PIB, le GDP, la croissance de l'économie. C'était comme plus de 2%. Donc, plus de 2%, entre 2 et 3%, c'est une économie très forte. Et quand on regarde ça, et on a un taux de chômage qui était environ présentement 4%. Ce n'est pas beaucoup de personnes qui n'ont pas de travail comme ça. C'est comme full employment, let's call it. We'll switch back and forth between English and
That's
French.
fine. No problem.
Because I know the words in English much better than I know the words in French too. But
Right.
so just to circle back. So we've had a very strong economy in the United States. We've had a weaker economy in Canada, about 1.3% growth. So the economy was growing at about 1.3%. A lot of that was benefiting from the population growth that we had in Canada, which was quite large. And the economy in Canada has been getting better, and the economy in the US has been very strong. So coming into this environment, you might think, well, why all these initiatives to try and boost economic growth when you already have a very strong economy? So it's not necessarily always been about growing the economy more. It's about, from the US administration's point of view, bringing back a lot of manufacturing, bringing back a lot of, it's really about reindustrialization, manufacturing, and building up some of the perhaps more rural areas that have been very supportive of the Republican campaign. That were perceived to have been penalized as a lot of manufacturing has moved off to other environments, China specifically. So that's been a lot. It's been that America first, bring jobs back to the United States, although they're pretty much at full employment right now.
Well, Donald Trump certainly didn't waste any time when he took over the presidency. We've seen a flurry of executive orders, and we're, sort of on the cusp of the 60-ish days of his presidency, but he had actually passed more than 70 executive orders as of February 20th. The most of any president's first 100 days in more than 40 years. So, alors, comme tu disais tantôt, Neil, il y avait la volonté, il y a la volonté de vouloir rapatrier certaines industries aux États-Unis, d'équilibrer peut-être l'égalité dans la richesse à travers les États-Unis, mais avec toutes ces ordres exécutifs. À part des tarifs, parce qu'on va focusser là-dessus, c'est sûr. Qu'est-ce qui ressort pour toi? So, what really sticks out in this, this flurry of executive orders that we've seen since Trump took over?
I mean, you can look at that from a political perspective. And probably the biggest one has been around immigration and deporting. A lot of, I guess, the temporary workers, restricting the visas for workers in the US. And I think that's probably in order to remove some of the workers that were perceived to be taking some of the jobs away from Americans that would have otherwise wanted to do those and wanted to have more active participation in the labor force. I mean, there's a lot of other reforms about different aspects. One of the big ones that's getting headlines, of course, is DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency, which is being headed by Elon Musk, for lack of a better description about how that organization is operating. So there's, reduction of government waste, which I think everybody agrees that all governments have a certain amount of waste, and but the question is, how do you reduce that waste? How do you make things more efficient? And it's been rather a little bit chaotic as far as reducing the workforce very dramatically, very quickly, just the same way that tariffs have been implemented very dramatically and very quickly. So there's a lot of political aspects that I'm maybe not completely qualified to discuss, but we can focus in on the financial aspects and the economic aspects, I think, of some of these decisions. And obviously, this is the reaction around tariffs, how they've been implemented. We can talk about what effect that might have on economic growth, what effect it might have on unemployment and the unemployment rate, and what effect it might have on interest rates, obviously in the US, but we're probably more concerned right now about what that impact is going to be in Canada, I'm guessing.
For sure. So let's jump into the tariff question parce qu'il y en a long à dire sur les tarifs et on va également regarder comment ça a affecté les marchés, puis les marchés boursiers à travers le monde, hein, parce que pas juste les États-Unis, mais c'est sûr que pour nos investisseurs, ils ont vu beaucoup de volatilité depuis l'arrivée de Trump. Puis juste pour reculer un petit peu, donc, nous sommes quand même assis sur deux excellentes années de rendement, hein? 2023, 2024. Vers la fin de 2024, juste avant les élections, on a vu les marchés reculer un petit peu avec l'appréhension que les élections amèneraient de l'incertitude, pas une décision finale ou décisive pour qui aurait gagné, puis ça serait tiré en longueur. Mais finalement, le résultat était franc et positif pour les républicains. So the markets reacted very positively to the fact that the U.S. electorate had brought in a Republican government, and we saw the market shoot up. And the good times continued to roll until the talk of tariffs started making people nervous. And it's really been since the beginning of 2025 that we've had a lot of volatility associated with how the tariffs are going to be implemented. So why don't you talk a bit about that in relation to market volatility? And we can maybe start by focusing on what was said initially, and sort of expand that to where we're at now, if you've figured it out, because I'm not sure I totally know.
Well, I think I can add a little bit of perspective here. So if we look at what we call the Trump bump, je sais pas c'est quoi le Trump bump en français, s'il y a une
Le
traduction.
rebond de Trump, peut-être. Oui.
So if we look at the Trump bump, which was after the election, the markets got very excited at some of the aspects of the platform you asked before. So there's a reindustrialization. So expected more manufacturing in the United States to benefit Americans. Deregulation. So there was the financials responded very well in the United States because it was like, we'll drop the regulatory requirements so that it's easier to do mergers and acquisitions. It's easier for financial companies to benefit, especially capital markets. So there'll be more activity in the financial markets. And we'll get lower rates and lower taxes was a big thing, which was expected to benefit the small cap stocks and a lot of these different industries. So that was really the Trump bump. A lot of excitement about all these positive things that were going to come into play. So, delving into the politics a little bit is that if the first things that were going to come across were the deregulation, the reindustrialization, and all these types of positive things and the tax cuts, we probably would have had a continuation of that. But unfortunately, the more disruptive aspects of the platform, which were tariffs, came into play, and they came into play very quickly, very large, very forcefully. I think the market had expected that this was going to be more of a negotiation aspect. We would threaten tariffs, countries would respond, we would lower the barriers to American goods in all these different countries. And everything was going to be a little bit easier to deal with, and then we would set up and we would follow that up with the tax cuts. Unfortunately, the tariffs came in, very quickly, very wild and very high, coming after, Canada to a certain extent very quickly, which was unexpected. The focus was expected to have been on China and the trade deficit there. So I think it caught a lot of people off guard. And what it's done is because of all the goods which go from Canada into the United States, if you put these tariffs on and they're somewhat haphazardly announced, that increases the difficulty of US companies to be able to plan with any kind of certainty. Donc, si tu savais pas c'est quoi les coûts de production dans les prochaines années, les prochains mois, c'est très difficile pour les compagnies en Amérique de faire des plans pour les prochaines années. So this is the situation we got into, where it's the uncertainty of what the environment is going to be like, which is affecting the ability of companies to plan and therefore grow or invest. So while you're getting this is where it starts to become a little bit disruptive, and you can't really think about building new production facilities if you don't know what your costs are going to be, if you don't know what your market is going to be, and when other countries retaliate with their tariffs, you don't know now what your export markets are going to be able to do. So it's not so much putting the tariffs in place that caused the problems. It's the uncertainty around the kind of on again, off again thing. If companies were given, this is what the tariff rate is going to be, and it's cast in stone, and this is what you're going to have to deal with, there would be planning and there would be mechanisms, and companies would fix this. But it's been this kind of haphazard thing. So where are we now? So we did have, again, the Trump bump, and then we saw the market sell off a bit and get a little bit distracted by all this. Now, part of that was, again, the front loading of all these kind of difficult things around the tariffs before we get into the deregulation and all the good financial aspects of reducing taxes. The other thing has been the Magnificent Seven. So if we look at what's been happening with the technology stocks, I don't know, Mary, so what do you think? Or do you have clients that are interested in the Magnificent Seven and the tech and artificial intelligence?
Well, actually, I would like to chime in here and say, because I'm on record with BNN for liking technology, and I continue to like technology, although I said at the beginning of the year, and I just wanted to hark back to those two really great years we had, 2023, 2024, and Magnificent Seven was a big driver of the US market. On était dû pour une correction. Et je pense que les tarifs vont faire une excuse vraiment parfaite parce que, effectivement, ce que les marchés n'aiment pas, c'est l'incertitude. Mais je continue pour répondre à ta question. Je continue à aimer beaucoup les titres de technologie. Et on a récemment rééquilibré les portefeuilles, puis en fait bonifié un petit peu notre position en technologie suite au recul qu'on vient de voir. Alors, je pense que sur le long terme, c'est un secteur qui a toujours su se réinventer. Ça serait peut-être pas toujours les magnifiques sept. Puis, je ne sais pas si c'est un bon moment. Mais c'est peut-être un bon moment aussi pour parler de, durant tout ça, on a eu l'arrivée de DeepSeek, hein, ce qui a bénéficié également le marché de la Chine, qui performe très bien depuis le début de l'année. Mais maybe you got more than you asked for there with that answer about technology. So you can start from wherever you want at this point. But I did want to say that I continue to like technology.
Yes, and I think a takeaway from that is, technology is good, and we like technology, and there's a lot of opportunities around artificial intelligence. Okay, so 30 plus years ago, I started at Nortel, and I was working there, and we had a lot of fiber that went into the ground, and everybody was very excited about the internet and dot-com companies and everything like that, and we kind of had that collapse in the dot-com bubble that burst, and you had this big hardware build, But then you had maybe 10 years for the applications and the software to figure out how to effectively use it. I don't think we're going to have that situation this time. So we do have artificial intelligence, which is this new technology, and it's been responsible for a lot of the improvement, the croissance on the in the markets. But now we're going to see that diffusion of artificial intelligence into a lot of different industries. We're seeing it in consumer products, we're seeing it in industrials. We're seeing a lot of companies, even, you know, Raymond James and other financial companies, are using artificial intelligence to complement the service and look at how we can use all these technologies to our benefit without, you know, putting people out of jobs or anything like that, but improving the service level. So I think that's happening a lot quicker. And if you look at the number of companies and the industries that have talked about artificial intelligence on their quarterly conference calls, that's quadrupled in the last 2 years. And it's every single industry is talking about artificial intelligence and how they can use that to become more efficient. And this is one of the reasons that we think that there's a good productivity boost that's coming into the market, and it's coming in quicker than that improvement that we saw after the dot-com bubble. So let's put that aside for a second. When we talk about what the markets have been doing, we talk about the Magnificent Seven. There's a couple of reasons that they did so well over the last couple of years. Partly was because this artificial intelligence, the AI enthusiasm on how that was driving up stocks like Nvidia, and then the hyperscalers like Microsoft and Meta, and these other technology companies. What was happening at the same time was there was a lot of uncertainty in a lot of other regions around the world, and the US, and especially the Magnificent Seven, became the safe haven for international investors. Mega cap companies had exposure to artificial intelligence, were selling products all over the world, you know, take a Microsoft or a Meta or an Apple, and they were almost like a safe haven for places for people to invest. Now what's happened, and you mentioned DeepSeek. Donc, il y a toujours des technologies que la Chine et les autres compagnies peuvent exploiter ou pour faire peut-être moins cher ou avec des autres applications. So, what's happened is DeepSeek showed that you could use this technology at a lower cost. So, that started to put into question all the big capital spending, the big money that was being spent on Nvidia chips, and maybe there's a better way to do this. And it started putting a little bit of a doubt as to what the valuation, if the valuation multiples of the Magnificent Seven were really justified. So that was kind of like the first type of shock that we saw to this valuation, and we started to see a little bit of pressure on this valuation. And now, as we've seen other areas of the globe being a little bit more attractive, like investing in European stocks, which were much cheaper than these American stocks, these international investors now have more options. So they're not limited to just investing in the Magnificent Seven. They're looking at other places. So this is also one of the really important things. The themes here is also diversification of your portfolio, making sure you're properly diversified and you don't have 100% of your portfolio in Tesla or something along these lines, because that's just going to be a recipe for volatility and huge swings one way or another. So I think that's what's been going on recently. So we're seeing this, there's more alternatives in the world. There's been a little bit of concern over the valuation multiples. There's been more movement into other areas of the US market. So we did, when we were just in your office the other week doing a presentation, we were talking about the Magnificent Seven versus the other 493 companies in the S&P 500. And the earnings growth in the last couple of years, the earnings in the S&P 500 had mainly come from the Magnificent Seven companies. Nvidia was getting 80% gross margin on their chips, right? But now we've seen a lot more broadening out of the market, and the other 493 companies in the S&P 500 have been contributing to the earnings in the US market. And this is good, but we've seen this shift really from mega cap growth to large cap value. And that's good because we want to see this broadening out of the market, and we don't want to see all this emphasis just on seven stocks or almost on one or two stocks on certain days. So this is actually healthy for the market. Even if we have a pullback in certain stocks, you actually have more stocks which are starting to benefit from this, again, broadening out.
This is really interesting stuff here that you're talking about. And of course, as I said earlier, technology is dear to my heart, but to a certain degree in a portfolio. However, since we're on the topic of stocks and the stock market, because I do want to come back to tariffs and how we're living that here on the Canadian side of the border, just perhaps renchérir sur le point que ce qui se produit du côté des sept magnifiques actions du côté de la technologie, en fait, offrir l'opportunité aux investisseurs de regarder ailleurs. Il y a peut-être d'autres raisons aussi que la technologie, mais le fait est, dans un portefeuille bien diversifié, l'Europe et la Chine, année à date, sont positifs, même très positifs. Alors, est-ce que tu voudrais continuer peut-être à offrir des explications sur le fait que, sur le pourquoi ça se produit comme ça actuellement?
Oui, comme je dis, on a parlé de l'Europe. Présentement, il y a des plans de faire beaucoup d'investissements sur défense et d'infrastructures en Europe, Allemande spécifique. Et ça vous donne des opportunités pour des investisseurs de faire plus d'investissements en Europe. So it's becoming a little bit more interesting of a place to play, and it's becoming that alternative to just having to invest in the US because that's where the growth was, that's where the liquidity was. Donc il y a des options comme ça aussi au Japon, au Chine. Un peu. So there's more options all around the world for various reasons. That's something we want to focus on, but we want to understand specifically being in Canada, les opportunités au Canada. Donc, si tu vois de l'or présentement, so gold, it's had a great run recently. Et une partie de ça, c'est de incertitude de volatilité. Ça c'est un environnement qu'on voit des compagnies et de commodities de l'or that does well in these uncertain environments. So, with getting to get back to your point of diversification, there's different reasons that we want to spread the money around to different areas because there's different opportunities and we don't want to be held, hostage to a certain extent of one company and one industry or even in one country. So we do want to do that, but we want to do it in a very responsible way to try and reduce the risk of a portfolio and maximize the returns, obviously. Was that?
Yeah, that's a great answer. I would like to take this time to answer a client's question that was emailed to me. She said I can't be at the webinar, but my question is, what are you doing to, make your portfolios, to help your portfolios be more robust or defensive during this period? So we obviously have portfolios. My discretionary portfolios are well diversified. We have benefited from exposure to Europe, from exposure to China, from gold in the portfolios. And we also have alternative investment that does not have a positive correlation to equities. Okay. So all of that together has helped our portfolios stay positive year to date. Et beaucoup de gens sont surpris. Parce qu'on parle beaucoup de la volatilité, correction aux États-Unis, correction du secteur de la technologie, mais si on regarde comment ça se traduit dans nos portefeuilles, ben souvent c'est des surprises en fait plutôt positives. Alors on veut souligner ça que I've always said the one free lunch in investing is diversification. Okay. So we respect that. We also focus on the fact, and my over 3 years of experience in managing portfolios has showed me, and especially since 2008, 2009, is the markets can reprice themselves faster then you can trade and make changes in a portfolio. Okay. So I'm very cognizant of that. We're not trying to trade around what's happening right now, but we have been defensive. So that's my answer to that question. And maybe I'll use that as a jumping point pour toi, Neil, parce que tantôt tu parlais de ce qui se passe du côté des États-Unis avec les tarifs, comment ça devient plus difficile pour les compagnies de planifier, etc. Ben là, peut-être on parlera un petit peu de comment ça se passe du côté canadien, parce que, et on peut inclure un petit peu l'Europe là-dedans, parce qu'il y a quand même le corollaire du négativisme des tarifs, c'est que there is a bit of a silver lining in the way countries are right now getting their house in order so they aren't necessarily as dependent on trade with the US. So maybe you could explain that a bit more on how we are living the tariff situation right here in Canada.
Well, I think there's a couple of different things there, but there are also important points that we don't want to make sure that we don't miss talking about. So, as far as the tariff impact on Canada goes, let's start with that. So, to set it up, the Canadian economy, the GDP growth, we call it, gross domestic product, 1.3% growth in 2024, and we were looking at 1.8% growth in 2025 and 1.8% growth in 2026. And this is the Bank of Canada, this is their forecast. So we were looking at a growing economy. And when you get back to around that 2% growth level, that's a pretty decent growth level. The Bank of Canada put out an analysis in January as to what the impact of that growth rate would be under 25% tariff, global tariff against Canada, and retaliatory tariffs in Canada as we're seeing now. And it was a 2.4% drag on that growth number. That would put us at about a 0.6% contraction in the first year, which notionally let's call it 2025. So if we had a drag of 0.6% on GDP, you had the question we were talking about before about whether that triggers a recession in Canada. So a recession is typically technically talked about as far as two negative quarters of GDP. So if you have an economic contraction in two consecutive quarters, a lot of people call that a technical recession. In effect, a recession isn't really identified until pretty much well after the fact, and it has to go with how bad the decline was, how long it persisted, what the impact was on things like the unemployment rate, and how much hardship did it place on Canadians. So technically, yes, in a worst case scenario, if we have these tariffs and they're in place for, say, more than 6 months, we would expect there to be a, you would call that a mild recession at this point. So let me put that in context. So even that worst case scenario that the Bank of Canada put out, 0.6% contraction, so less than 1% contraction, in COVID 2020, you may recall, that wasn't that long ago, feels like ages ago, feels like just yesterday as well. That was a 5% contraction in the economy with a very quick rebound the following year. If we go back to the great financial crisis, which you may remember, 2009,
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
that was a 2.9%
Yeah.
contraction. So I just want to put these sizes in context. And then if you go back to 1991, we had a global economic slowdown, and that was a 2% contraction. I mean, we lived through all those periods, right? We didn't set our hair on fire and run around like a chicken and panicking every day. And it wasn't great. It wasn't a nice time. Some people had some real hardships. People lose their jobs and there's restructurings and stuff. But Canada survives. It's not an existential crisis by any means. We've had tariffs before free trade, and we potentially will be looking at having them again. So after the second year, that starts to right size itself. And so if we have tariffs, we have them for an extended period of time and we have them at a high level, yes, there's economic pain. And even with the free trade discussions, the USMCA, there will be industries which will be disadvantaged. The automobile industry is going under a little bit of pressure. Steel and aluminum, we've seen tariffs from the United States. The oil and gas, the people are concerned about the energy industry because 97% of the crude oil that we export goes to the United States because that's where our pipelines go. That's been easy access. I think people don't understand. So one, there was the context about how significant is this impact? So it will be significant to certain people, to certain industries, to certain companies. It's not an existential threat to Canada at this point, with the context of what we've been talking about. And I think a lot of people don't understand the interdependence of the US economy on the Canadian goods that are sent. The US also exports for about the equivalent 4 million barrels per day of the gas of the crude that it produces, which is the light sweet crude that comes out of the shale. They sell that to export markets at a higher price than they import the Canadian crude. So think about that for a second. 4 million barrels a day goes in, 4 million barrels a day goes out, but you can't replace them because the refiners are set up to accept the heavy crude. So if they didn't want to take the Canadian crude and they were going to get it from somewhere else to keep their refineries running, where do you get it from? Well, you can get it from Mexico, right? They have similar heavy crude. Venezuela, although there's new rules as far as nobody's allowed to buy Venezuelan crude because there's tariffs that will be put on your country if you buy Venezuelan crude. So that's not something that they can just turn the tap off tomorrow. So there's a lot more value that's coming out of Canada into the US that even if there was a 10% tariff on that tomorrow, it increases the cost to the refiners, but there's really no alternative. So when you're talking about tariffs, you have to consider whether or not the country that's importing and being subject to tariffs, if there's an alternative for them tomorrow, and there isn't an alternative that's available tomorrow for that crude. If we look at the steel and aluminum tariffs, the aluminum capacity in the US is about 700 metric tons per year. The US imports about 4 million metric tons per year from primarily Quebec, right? They don't have the aluminum capacity in the United States to be able to replace that if they were going to shut off that supply of aluminum. So there's a lot of goods like the oil, like the aluminum, that go into the United States, that there's no quick switch as far as those alternatives. Another example is the automobile industry, right? There's supply chains that go back and cross the border. Sometimes you have a part that goes back and cross the border 7 times before it's completed. You can't turn that off in 30 days. It'll take you years and tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars to replicate those facilities in the United States. So a lot of this stuff, it's not like the tariffs cause all the exports from Canada to the US to stop. There's pain, there's redirecting of supply chains. Two-thirds of everything that's imported into the United States from Canada is used as an input cost in US manufacturing. So
Right.
it's not like we're sending them ketchup that
So
they can just decide to buy the local ketchup. These are products which go into airplanes, automobiles, healthcare, pharmaceutical costs. There's a lot of exports that are not going to stop just because there's a tariff on them.
I totally agree with you. And, without getting too much into the political aspect of this, I think it's why we're seeing the on again, off again situation with the tariffs. It's as if someone is announcing tariffs before the economists have done the math. And, is it a strategy? Is it whatever? But it's like somebody does the math and then we come back to the table and say, well, maybe not exactly that, not quite that. Alors, mais on laissera ça pour d'autres gens à spéculer. Moi, je veux revenir au Canada. Ben, on est au Canada présentement pour parler de l'impact des tarifs. Moi, j'étais surprise d'apprendre qu'on a plus de, and I think we call them here interprovincial trade barriers as opposed to tariffs than we do between Canada and the US. So obviously, on va. Puis avec les élections qui s'en viennent, ça fait partie du plateforme des politiciens. Mais comment est-ce qu'on va améliorer notre situation au Canada pour les échanges interprovinciaux? Alors, je te pose cette question-là et j'aimerais aussi, parce que tu as parlé un petit peu de la possibilité d'avoir une récession, est-ce que tu vois aussi les menaces d'inflation avec les tarifs.
OK, so il y a deux choses là. Donc, avec les interprovincial trade barriers, qu'on dit, j'ai lu un rapport, je pense que c'était Deloitte, qui s'était fait il y a quelques années, qui ont établi que si on arrête toutes les choses comme ça, des barrières interprovinciales, ça peut améliorer la croissance économique, le GDP, PIB, par
PIB.
PIB. M'excuse, par 4%.
Ouais.
4%. On a parlé en avant de moins 0,6% à cause des tarifs avec les Américains. Mais si on peut avoir une croissance de 4%, d'éliminer toutes ces barrières, ça va être magnifique. Mais en réalité, qu'est-ce qu'on peut faire pour ça? Mais il y a des. Comme, if you get wine from British Columbia into Ontario or into Quebec, if you can pass that, that's a good passing, and we'd like to take down this tariff. So we want to eliminate those interprovincial trade barriers for goods. That would be fantastic. And you talked about a silver lining before to all this stuff. So there's been a few things. So we've seen, obviously, a lot more patriotism in Canada than I think we've seen in several decades.
Absolutely.
We've seen these, unofficial boycotts or whatever you have for American goods, and a favoritism of Canadian goods. And there's been a lot more enthusiasm or acceptance to promote and develop our own natural resources, be it oil, be it distribution by pipelines. Probably we're going to see that on the mining industry as far as permitting. So the fact that this is all being talked about and the interprovincial trade barriers is potentially humongous. So we want to take down those trade barriers for goods so they can pass border to border across provincial borders, because right now it has been easier to get products across the US border than provincial borders. So we want to get that stopped. The other aspect to that, though, is not necessarily about goods. It's about interprovincial, say, licensing of professionals being able to offer services across provinces. That might be a little bit more problematic, I think, because every province is going to want to have its regulations as far as its standards for buildings or for certain services or certain other kind of regulations. So it's not something that I think is going to be turned off tomorrow, but I am very much excited about seeing how these things, which have just been an impediment to growth within Canada, are potentially going to be alleviated by whatever party comes into power on April 28th and April 29th. So I think that's really a great thing to look forward to. Yes.
They're going to have to fill up the shelves at the SAQ that used to have US wine with stuff from other provinces, that's for sure. But what's your view then on the possibility that this brings back inflation? And could inflation be the trigger for another recession, or could both happen together? What are we looking at here in terms of possibilities?
Yes. So a lot depends, as I mentioned, on the level and extent of tariffs and really the time frame that we're looking at. So our assumption right now is that whatever tariffs come into play at whatever level, at whatever, at a country level, on an industry specific level, and we're talking between Canada and the US here. I think a lot of that is hopefully going to be rectified by the renegotiation of the USMCA, the US-Mexico-Canada Free Trade Agreement that replaced NAFTA and was signed by, President Trump in his first term. We're probably building up to a resetting of the playing field as far as that agreement, which was supposed to have been renegotiated in the middle of 2026. We think that's going to be pulled forward, and hopefully that's going to set a level playing field. It won't be the same playing field that we have now. There'll be things like supply management. There'll be content provisions on goods like automobile manufacturing, but that will at least give us some certainty to move forward with. So I don't think this is a protracted period of uncertainty around tariffs. It's going to propagate for several years, but the next year is going to be quite volatile because of this. But I'm sure when you build a portfolio for your clients, you're not focusing at only good just being good for the next 12 months, right? So you probably have portfolios which will outlive this administration, right? So certainly we will live through this volatility and your portfolios will be much better suited afterwards. So in the short term, is there the potential for this to bring back inflation? Not to the levels that we talked about in COVID. No, I definitely don't see that being the case. Even if we have fiscal stimulus from the government to help support people, industries that are impacted by the tariffs, which sounds like that's a real possibility, it wouldn't be anything close to the extent that we saw during COVID. We're not going to get back up to 8 or 9%. The Bank of Canada, in that analysis that we talked about before, was looking at a 0.1% increase in the inflation rate in the first year, and maybe a half a percentage point the following year if we see these tariffs and these retaliatory tariffs persist. So if you put all that into context, we're talking about right now we have, around a 2% tariff rate, right? Inflation rate. We had a little bit of a spike in February, but I think that's going to come I think that's going to come down. We can discuss why. But for the most part, we're right around our 2% target. I think you can see a little bit of a bump again if the tariffs come into play in size and over an extended period of time. If this is all over and it's a renegotiation and there's concessions and we get some kind of agreement in the next few months, the impacts could be relatively minor on a country level. Certain industries, companies, certain people will be affected to varying extents, but this is definitely not an existential crisis for Canada.
Well, that's great news to hear. Now, of course, every market correction happens for a reason. Every bear market happens for a reason. Certainly, when it's a bear market, there's often the tendency to think, oh my God, life is never going to be the same again. We'll never get out of this, and I'll never make money with my portfolio again. We're certainly not in that situation. And as you said, and I said, our clients are not looking at situations where their portfolios are negative. But we have also been reminding them for several months now that markets don't go up in a straight line. So it could have been anything at this point to make the markets correct. But as it turns out, we had a pretty darn good reason for having a correction. And I think that we kind of need to see some more sunny days, go out and get some fresh air. It's hard for people to get away from the news too, so that becomes very oppressive. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you, but I think for some people, it's worse than it should be because of the COVID factor.
I
But
think that one of the things that I've seen throughout this thing is, we do our strategic asset allocation models to try and figure out, how much risk a person should take based on their, their risk tolerance and what kind of returns they can expect. I think this has been a little bit of a wake-up call to some people as far as the risk level that they thought they were willing to take. I think, it's fantastic that, clients have advisors like you that really take them through that to make sure that they're properly balanced for their risk tolerance and the return objectives. They're not taking undue risk. They're not, we don't have 70% of our stocks in the Magnificent Seven or something along those lines, or 10% each. That's not diversification. But I think it's been a wake-up call, just like the tariffs have been a wake-up call to Canadian sovereignty and to Canadians thinking about, how they want to be as a nation and how they want to interact with everybody inside that nation and other countries aside from the US. So I think that this has all been the silver lining out of the whole thing. This kind of wake up call, and this puts you to realize where you really stand on these topics.
Et je trouve que c'est un message fantastique pour terminer notre webinaire parce qu'on est exactement dans les temps qu'on avait prévu pour discuter avec toi, Neil. So this is our thank you, merci moment. But I just want to reiterate, Neil, how grateful we all are to have you and your team supporting us in the work that we do for clients. You're always available. Your depth of knowledge, your experience, and the way you speak and explain things is absolutely fabulous. So, thank you for being here. So, Neil, once again, Thank you. And we'll say à la prochaine.
Merci. C'est toujours un plaisir.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Neil Lindsdale. Please make sure to subscribe to the Prosperous and Happy Life podcast on Spotify and share it with friends. Just a reminder that you can follow Neil's comments and research on the markets when you sign up for our free monthly newsletter on our website, www.maryhagerman.ca. And if you're looking for expert guidance on your path to prosperity and happiness, then reach out to our team. Everything you need to find us is in the show notes and on our website. You can also follow me on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. The links are in the show notes. Wishing you all prosperity and happiness. See you next time.
This podcast has been prepared by and expressed the opinions of Mary Hagerman and not necessarily the opinions of Raymond James Limited. Statistics, data, and other information presented are from sources RJL believes to be reliable, but their accuracy cannot be guaranteed. This podcast is for information purposes only and is not to be construed as an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchases of securities. Investors considering any investment should consult with their investment advisor to ensure that it is suitable for the investor's circumstances and risk tolerances before making any investment decisions. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Information provided in this podcast is general in nature and should not be construed as providing legal, accounting, and/or tax advice. Should viewers have any specific questions and/or issues in these areas, please consult your legal, tax, and/or accounting advisor. RJL is a member of the Canadian Investors Protection Fund.